Welcome, friends, to the October 18th episode of my podcast. I want to talk about a few different things today, most of which is centered on weight loss. I've had a lot of questions, inquiries from my colleagues, patients, and family members, so I thought it'd be worthwhile. For starting off, I want to say this is the hardest thing to do, and people should not be discouraged. What my effort here will be to tell you the metabolism or the biochemistry behind it, so maybe some of the efforts will be properly directed, because there's a lot of misinformation, a lot of confusion. So most of my patients and most people in general really are struggling to lose excess body fat. And many of them are really trying. They're controlling the calories, exercising regularly, avoiding unhealthy foods, but even then they're not able to shed the weight. And there's lots of misconceptions about weight loss. The commonest misconception is that, you know, eating more fat makes you gain weight. Not entirely true. So the idea here is to really focus on what are the most effective strategies that are going to help us. I want to talk about starting off with different parts of the diet first. So there are two major macronutrients, what we call, and those macronutrients are carbohydrates and fat. And there's lots of confusion about the role of each. And there is changes that each one's intake does and how it's metabolized, which will actually help people make the better decision. Dietary fat does not lead to increased body fat. Neither does intake of dietary cholesterol lead to more blood cholesterol level. And there are definitely healthy and unhealthy carbohydrates, and restriction of carbohydrates are important. These are some of the basic principles. But let's start with carbohydrates first. So what are carbohydrates? They're essentially chains of glucose molecules. They're either called simple, when they are small molecules, 1, 2, 3 glucose units linked up together, or complex, that are long chains of these same molecules. And after we eat, the body will break them down. They travel, they provide energy. A very important hormone in the body that controls carbohydrate or glucose trafficking is insulin. So whenever we take any carbohydrates in the body, they can end up in one of three places in the body. They can end up in the liver, the muscle tissue, or the fat cells. And what decides where they go is primarily insulin. The insulin is the master hormone, as everybody knows, is produced by the pancreas, and it's the key determinant of where the glucose ends up. And the main job of insulin is to move excess glucose out of your bloodstream and into either the muscles or the fat tissue or the liver. And we know that high levels of glucose are not good, because we know diabetics who have uncontrolled diabetes, they tend to get all kinds of damage from high glucose, like eyes, they can get retinopathy, kidneys, nephropathy, neuropathy in the neurons. These are all organ damage. Now, glucose can enter the liver without the help of insulin, but once it gets there, it still needs insulin to make glycogen, which is the storage product. So the way the body directs it is, it depends on the capacity. How much do these different three organs have a capacity to either hold on to glucose or use it or store it? Then it depends on, do we have enough insulin, which will allow this to enter the tissue? And also the demand, is that site very active, like a muscle, which needs a lot of sugar? So the biggest problem we have, that we have a parking problem, which means that most of our sites, our liver and our muscles, are filled to capacity. So the storage form of glucose in the body is called glycogen. The liver can hold glycogen up to about 100 grams in the average liver. A muscle can hold 300 to 500 grams of glycogen, depending on the fitness level of a person. So athletes obviously have a much higher capacity to hold on to the glycogen. So now think of a situation that you have a person whose liver is saturated with glycogen because they've obviously been taking carbs excess of their capacity to use them, and their muscles are filled. Then there's only one place that that extra carbohydrates are gonna go, and those are into your fat cells. And that's which is why the excess carbohydrates are a big factor in terms of not being able to lose weight. Then there's the whole issue of course, insulin resistance. So insulin, as I said, is the ticket that these glucose molecules need to either enter the muscle or the fat tissue. Liver, they don't need them to enter, but they do need insulin to convert it into glycogen, which is a storage product there. So if somebody is already overweight and they have insulin resistance, then the high-carb meal is going to end up mainly in the fat tissue. So liver has, as I mentioned earlier, a capacity to have glycogen up to about 100 grams. But excess of that, the liver will convert that glucose into fat, and that's converted in the form of triglycerides. And then triglycerides are exported into the bloodstream, and those can get deposited in the liver. This is a very common entity. About almost one out of two people are developing fatty liver, which is very common. Or they will get deposited in other organs like abdominal visceral fat. And then there's a whole issue of demand. I mean, if somebody is not very active or not exercising, then their muscle is not going to use the glycogen, and they'll never have room in the muscle or the liver to store it. And that's why they're going to go into fat tissue. So this is a very important thing to understand, that carbohydrates by itself are not bad, but in the context of a person's biology, excess carbohydrates will cause problems. This is a very, very important concept. So muscles are normally very active. So if a person is very physically active, muscles can take almost 70% of the glucose that we eat. But if the muscle glycogen sites are all full, glucose can't go there, then it's going to essentially divert it again into fat tissue. Now, there are two kinds of carbohydrates, of course, the fast and the slow carbs, and we all know that. So fast carbs are the simple carbs. These are the straight sugar, which we don't like because they cause abrupt increases in the blood sugar levels. They cause the insulin level to spike, and then they lead not only to more fat storage, but also an immediate drop in blood sugar, which actually exacerbates the hunger and triggers even more high carb eating. And it is not good for the brain either. The brain does not like these sudden spikes up and down. So while you take sugar, you may have a elevated mood briefly, but when the sugar plummets, you're going to notice your mood and energy levels change. So the summary is the fast carbs lead to a fast rise in blood sugar, a very steep rise in fat-storing insulin level, a very rapid swing in blood glucose, and that'll cause fluctuating hunger and energy, which is why people have this vicious cycle. They eat and then they're hungry again 2 hours later. Slow carbs, although, cause this much, much slower. So they cause a much steadier rise in blood sugar, a much more controlled release of insulin, which keeps the hunger and energy more stable for 6 to 8 hours. So what are the simple carbs? These are all of your table sugar. So anything with sugar added, your cookies, your cakes, even certain types of fruit sugar, I'm going to talk about that in a minute. Lactose, which is in the dairy products, that is also not a good sugar. Jelly, jams, your soda drinks, popsicles, ice creams, breakfast cereals, a lot of them, and even energy bars, they're not good. Even your supplements like Boost and Ensure, they're already sugars. So we don't recommend the simple carbs. Now the complex carbohydrates, the slow carbs, are much better. Those are your beans, your starchy vegetables, even potatoes, whole grain cereals, quinoa, pasta, all grains, barley, millet, all lentils, all beans, you know, and different kinds of beans, whether it be garbanzo beans, red beans, all are excellent sources of complex low carbohydrates. So we're locked into this mode of constant fat storage because this continued ingestion of high carb meals that continue to stimulate excessive insulin production. Now, what about fruits? Now, there are certain fruits that are healthier than others, but most fruits that are very high sugar, they are still going to be released somewhat slowly because there's generally fiber added on. But there are a few exceptions. I mean, and those fruits should be taken in moderation. Things like bananas and mangoes tend to have relatively high amounts of sugar, even pineapples. So although they do have fiber and they do have other nutrients which are important for the body, moderation in their intake is very important. On the other hand, fruits that have a very high amount of fiber and relatively lower amount of sugar, like apples, maybe a better choice, or pears, maybe a better choice. So this constantly fluctuating energy and appetite is not healthy or productive. The body perceives the blood sugar fluctuations as stressful events, and it will trigger this fight or flight response, and that can cause even a more vicious cycle with more cortisol production. So the problem is that too much insulin is the enemy. Insulin is very important, and in optimal amounts, it plays an important role in converting nutrients into energy that our body can use. But because of high carbohydrate intake, the spikes in the total amount of insulin released is very high, and we're locked in a constant mode of fat storage because of this continued ingestion of high carb meals that stimulate this excessive insulin production. So insulin is really an insulating hormone. Basically, many animals that produce layers of extra body fat before winter to serve as insulation from extreme conditions. But in our case, the situation has changed. We are not exposed to the elements like we were. We're not out working the fields like our forefathers were. So this is working against us. And unless we adapt, we are eating like our forefathers did even two generations ago, but they were out doing a lot of physical labor, while an average person this day and age is on a desk working a computer 8 to 10 hours, not much physical activity, and we're eating like our forefathers did. That can't be right. So basically, think of it this way. The extra fat on humans increases the risk of chronic conditions, all heart disease, diabetes, and even our fatty liver. The extra body fat around the belly in particular is even worse. It produces chemicals that can further worsen insulin resistance. This is a very important point. This is a point especially in certain populations, like the South Asian population. The fatter you get, the more insulin resistant you become, and it's easy to pile on even more body fat because insulin's got to have to be produced in higher levels. And insulin resistance, if it's not addressed early on, it will cause the pancreas to eventually tire out, and that's when people start becoming diabetic because there's just not enough insulin to overcome the insulin resistance. So how do we change that? The first and foremost step is reducing excess carbohydrates in your diet. Not only reduces insulin level, it can potentially reverse insulin resistance. It gives our body an opportunity to shift from fat storing to fat burning mode. When insulin levels are lowered, the body fat is broken down into fatty acid. They're released into the bloodstream. And fatty acids are really the good version of fat. They're a tremendous source of energy. Our body needs them. The flip side is, of course, the deposited fat, which is not good for us. So even within a few weeks of making a change of carb reduction, significant changes occur. Drop in weight, reduction in food cravings, increase in energy. And how quickly it happened will depend on your genes, your hormones, your stress, and your sleep. So I recommend my listeners not get impatient if they don't see immediate results, because most of us have been sugar burners for the majority of our lives and have significant metabolic damage. So it takes some time for us to reverse it. Now, what about the dietary fat? This is the second portion of my discussion. We talk about the two macronutrients. Fat alone does not increase insulin level. This is very important. Fat in the absence of excess carbohydrates is not fattening, which is a big shock to a lot of people because everybody thinks fat causes more fattening, but that is not true. So very important to understand. But if there is plenty of insulin hanging around due to a high carbohydrate diet or insulin resistance, then the fat will ride on to the insulin and go to the fat cells. So does it mean that we can consume as much fat as we want? No. We still need to identify the good fats and the bad fats. Saturated fats have their place, which come mainly from animal sources. And they're really not bad fats. But there's a place where we have to balance these out. Saturated fats are very important in making our cell membranes, which is such an important critical organ for us. But there are other fats which have excellent health benefits. They have monounsaturated fats, omega-3s. These are like the olive oils, the avocados, nuts, and seeds. They do not have any impact on the insulin level, but they have a lot of health-promoting benefits, which is why the Mediterranean diet is such an important diet. And especially if you get omega-3s from marine sources like the fish, salmon, mackerel, they have great benefits, anti-inflammatory and heart-healthy benefits. So we're getting slightly off topic. I want to stay with the main key point that I'm talking about today, which is carbohydrates. But there's an important thing that saturated fats are not necessarily bad for us in a combination with other oils like olive oils and polyunsaturated fatty acids. So in one of the previous podcasts, I had discussed there's a critical ratio we need to maintain when it comes to polyunsaturated fatty acid, and that's the omega-6 to omega-3 ratio. The ideal ratio for omega-6 to omega-3 is 3:1 or less. Our current state, we're eating a lot more omega-6s than omega-3s, and now our current diet is having almost 16:1. Which is causing a lot of inflammation. So those are the partially hydrogenated fats, trans fats in particular. So having more monounsaturated, so just to review the facts, having some amount of animal sources of your saturated fat, which is milk, butter, even a type of Indian saturated butter called ghee is okay, taken in the right amounts. Combined with monounsaturated fats like olives, olive oil, avocados, and then certain degree of omega-6s as well, which we are easy to get from a lot of the processed and packaged foods. So why do some people still struggle with fat loss? That's primarily, again, because the excess insulin triggered by our dietary carbs converts both the dietary fat and dietary carbs into triglycerides to store in our fat cells. So fats by themselves do not do it, but the carbohydrates in conjunction with fats will do it. And this is what causes our waistlines to swell. But eating fat without carbohydrates won't make you fat without insulin. Insulin always comes with ingested carbohydrates. So that's a very important point to know. Now, insulin resistance makes the fat loss even more challenging. Even people have a small amount of insulin resistance, they're already on that slide down because guess what? If there is resistance, the body's going to try to make more insulin and more fat deposit. So you have to break the cycle. And how we break the cycle is primarily by exercise. We become more insulin sensitive when we exercise and we reduce our body fat. So there is some genetic variation. Some people are more prone to develop insulin resistance, others are not. But everybody has a certain level at which they will become insulin resistant depending on their body weight. There is a huge connection between other factors as well come into play. There's a mind-insulin connection. Because insulin release is not just triggered by glucose, even the very thought of food or smell of food can release a preprandial insulin before we've even touched any kind of food. Some appetizers can increase hunger for that reason, because the moment we think or start eating them, their insulin spike goes up and then our appetite really goes up. So there are other factors that affect fat storage, and they are the important ones are insufficient sleep, because insufficient sleep elevates hunger hormones, suppresses the satiety hormones, and promotes fat storage instead of fat burning. Gender also plays a role. Men tend to have a more fat storage capacity around the abdomen than women. Women tend to store more in the waist and hips and buttocks. Pregnancy, of course, makes increased capacity of fat storage because the body needs it for the baby. But the two other factors I'm going to talk about is insufficient or poor sleep and high stress, both of which indirectly increase cortisol. And cortisol is a fight or flight response hormone, as most of you know. And one of the common effects of cortisol is cause excess fat deposition, especially around the abdomen, especially when insulin levels are high. And insufficient sleep does the same thing. There's a level of a hunger-stimulated hormone called ghrelin, is spelled with a G, G-H-R-E-L-I-N. Now that lowers our sensitivity to the fullness hormone leptin, means that our hunger goes up, and this is from lack of sleep or not proper sleep. So low-fat diets do not work. We really have to focus in a big picture of reducing our overall glycemic load or overall carbohydrate load. And this is where the key thing is. How we can do it is be certainly increasing our vegetable fruit intake, very important. Increasing activity and exercise, very important. Stress management, extremely important. And then heart healthy fats like olive oil, nuts, seed, fish. So to achieve success, we really have to look at the whole picture. A low-fat diet will not get us there. And now when you start on a low-carb diet, you really kind of have to be mindful of, everybody needs a certain amount of carbohydrates. So, and that's a hard thing to assess for each person, but the least amount of carbohydrates you can get by with is what's the key is. So just to summarize, the major weight loss myths are wrong. Weight is not gained when you eat more calories than you burn. Low-fat foods do not cause us to lose weight. And exercise alone never helps you lose weight. Insulin is the key hormone. Carbohydrates are driven by insulin. Insulin tells where they are to go. And increasing body fat makes us more insulin resistant. And that's why it makes us more susceptible to fat storage. And exercise, carb-restricted diet are the keys. So I'll stop here at this time and we'll continue this topic. It is such an important topic right now because especially with the COVID pandemic going on, we know obesity is a huge risk factor. People we've lost, unfortunately, tended to have more higher incidence of metabolic syndrome, as well as higher obesity levels. So this is one opportunity where we can turn an adversity into a positive thing by working on reducing our weight and obesity. Till next week, be safe, be healthy. Thank you for listening.